everybody. Oh, I need to get this started. Welcome. Nice to have you all. We are doing a Q&A, which is a follow-up on the session I did last week, which was all about how to feel feelings. As you guys can tell, my throat is really raspy. I have like a infection, like sinus. I'm not sure what it is, but it's in my sinuses, it's in my ears. So I wasn't allergic to October, which is something I said, but there is something in the air for sure. So I am going to do a Q&A today. If you guys have any questions, I would love for you to drop them in the questions box and I will get to them. So I'm now recording. And the first question I received was about purpose. Now this is a question I received a while back. I think I did a post on living your purpose and finding your purpose. And there's a short answer to this question. So the question was, well, what if I am not living my purpose and I am working to provide for my family? I feel like, you know, all of social media and all of popular culture really is always talking about passion and purpose, and I don't have that in my workplace. And that makes me feel, you know, like there should be something I'm ashamed of, or this is something that is wrong with me, this is something wrong that I'm doing. And I think that's really true. I think this kind of groupthink that is happening out there now, thanks to social media, is really, you know, just one message goes out there and then everybody sort of gets onto that message and it dismisses, dilutes, degrades all other messages that are equal value but are just not being heard. So what I would say to this person is that to work and be productive in your day is an honorable thing. And honor and integrity and caring for your family and providing for your family and being in service of another in some way or another, which is what we do when we are working, we are being productive members of the community. That is a purpose in the grand scheme of things. It may not be where your passion lays. And I would say that find a way to exercise that passion somewhere. You know, whether it is, you know, through art or through something you do on your free time. Find what puts you in a state of flow somewhere. And it could be anywhere, and it doesn't have to be a paid profession, but there is something that you are meant to do and that you are good at that puts you in a state of flow. Find that and do it somewhere. But to say that you are going to be doing that as, you know, a way of life when it comes to just a way, not as a way of life, but as a way of earning income, does not have to be so. And there is absolutely no shame in that. And actually, I find it to be of the utmost honorable thing to serve out of, you know, an obligation and a duty that you have to your family, to your community. So that's what I would say to that answer. I think sometimes we, you know, really blow things into out of proportion into thinking that we have to have purpose and passion in every corner of our life. And even those who are living their passion, let's just say it's an entrepreneur. You know, I spoke to someone recently and I could tell you, this is something I go through too, that people see this as, oh, I'm living my passion, I'm doing what I was put here on earth to do. I know this is my gift and I am bringing it to the world, but it comes with a lot of things that are not your passion. You've got to manage the books. You've got to know how to do a P&L. You've got to manage people. You've got to have a marketing strategy. Like, these things may not be something that an entrepreneur feels very excited about. They are just excited about the idea. And that's why, where there's like a serial entrepreneur, but or also someone who is just a creative, but they don't have the skill set to do the hard work, the grind. They basically sit in the idea after idea after idea, but they don't actually implement the idea because they don't want to do the hard stuff, the stuff that doesn't excite them, the stuff that doesn't give them joy. Not every part of your life is going to give you joy. You've got to do things that are difficult. You've got to do things that are not your passion, even in service of your passion. So that's something also to keep in mind, because there are a lot of people that are now just kind of, you know, changing careers. They hop career after career after career. They go to one job and then they're in this state of kind of honeymoon and they're learning and they're excited. And then just when it starts to get slightly monotonous, or they might have to do something that is difficult, they say, well, this is not my joy and I'm going to leave now. Like, you've got to go through periods where it's not going to be joyful. And I think this is what it links into what I wanted to say about relationships, which is that consumerism and cancel culture and social media are really rewiring us very differently. Like, we think everything has to be good all the time. Whether it's our relationships, whether it's our job, whether it's our, you know, our even our passion, you know, they think that it's just all good all the time. You see people winning, you see people filtered, you see people, you know, reaching their heights. You see people going viral and you just think that this is how life should be. But what are the messaging? What are the messages that people are getting from that? These become our values. These become our lived values. Let's take consumerism, for example. My phone works really well. I just got it a year ago. But now there's like another phone that came out, which is the latest version of this phone. And it looks just like that phone. And it might, I don't even know if I would be able to tell the difference between those two. But having the latest and the greatest version of the newest thing, that is a value. It is not the same value that our parents had. You hold on to something. I think my mom still has that toaster that she bought in like 1964 because it works. Why would I change it? You know, so that was their value. Like, you change it when it breaks. And even if it's broken, you first try to fix it and then you get rid of it. Right? If it doesn't work. Now think about that as a value, which is now seeping into every corner of our life. It becomes a way of being and a way of doing that. I really like this person. He seems like a good partner, but maybe there's something better out there for me. Or we are really good together. And we then have a relationship, but then this person makes me feel slightly better, so I'm going to move to this person. This is kind of seeping into our way of being. That's just consumerism, right? To have the latest, greatest thing. The second thing is cancel culture. Cancel culture, which everyone seems to be sort of engaging in. Everyone knows it's wrong, but they're still doing it. You know, to reduce a person to one moment, to something they said, and take that one thing out of the whole thing that they said, and then to just reduce them to that, and then say they should be fired, they should be, you know, just rejected from society. People lose jobs, they lose their relationships, they lose their friend circles, they literally become ostracized because of that one thing they said. And they might not have even said that in a, you know, that might not be the totality of their belief system. That might just be one of the things they said, and all the other things just didn't get fit into that 1 minute clip. And that's it. That it goes viral, and that person is ousted from society as we know it. Now, think about that and how that might impact the way you relate to people. It's literally changing the way people date. It's the way people are looking at their relationships, that how could you do this to me? I'm done with you. And it's like, well, I'm sorry I did this to you. Can we talk about this? Can we repair this rupture? Mm-mm, there's no repairing. We're moving on to the next. And I'll find my other tribe, and I'll find my other person, and I'll find my other job, and I'll find my other employer. Like, it is being reduced. We are being reduced, and it's black and white thinking. And it's splitting people into good or bad. So everything about us is being shaped as such. We make friends, we delete friends, we follow, we unfollow, we cancel, we block. This is how we've started talking too. I just blocked her. I don't want to have anything to do with her. But when you block her on social media, then what are you doing internally, like psychically, right? What's happening here? Are you just getting rid of her because she hurt you once or he hurt you once? Is there any space for repair? This is why, so this is the second question, relationships are so confusing these days. We actually don't have a model. And the model we have is really compromised, I would say. You know, the model of the earlier generations is not working today. The earlier generations was that we fight for each other. We try to make things work. And please, let's not go there and, oh, you know, why are you making me stay in a toxic relationship? I'm not asking you to do anything. You don't have to do anything. And I'm not talking about those relationships. I'm just talking about relationships that are good and bad, and there's tough times and good times, and there is moments of real ruptures, and then there's moments of real repairs, and that we keep facing each other and we keep saying, I want to make this work, I want to find a way to make this work, I really want us to be friends, I want us to be there for each other. This is what we used to do, but it is not happening so much anymore. You know, and so that's what I'm talking about. And I actually have yet to meet a person on this planet, including myself, that is perfect. And I have yet to meet a person who isn't nervous about saying something that will then be taken out of context and then blasted on social media, and then being afraid that that might result in them being canceled. It literally is like brainwashing, and it is a form of social control, in my opinion. It is a form of censoring to the utmost, where we don't have compassion. The opposite of cancel is compassion, where I'm like, or the opposite of cancel would be curious, but something where you are holding a whole person in mind, where, okay, well, they said that, I wonder why they said that, and what did she mean by that, and how would, no, there's no thinking, there's no engagement beyond what was said at superficial face value, and then you're thrown out. And that is shaping the way we relate to each other, and that's why relationships are so confusing these days. And these sweet little tiles that we make with all the little red flags, then we go on a date and all we see is red flags, you know, like, and there are people creating these tiles that may not know the impact that they're having, good and bad, but I don't think they've considered the downside of such things to reduce something. You know, people say, well, why don't you just write small? Somebody actually told me, you write too many long messages on your your Instagram tiles. I was like, I've got to try to fit. I mean, if I could, I would probably write like a novel per each tile, because there's so many different things to consider as I talk about purpose, or as I talk about relationships, as I talk about grief, as I talk about ruptures and repairs. There's so many things to consider. But because we're moving at lightning speed, because we're all in almost in a mild, moderate state of fight or flight all the time, we take the message, we apply the message, and we actually don't think about it very much. We don't think about, well, is this what I believe? Do I think that's a red flag? Do I actually act like that? Could I be the red flag? Could I be the one that's toxic? Could I be the one that's using people? Could I be the one that's hurting people? No one is thinking. They're just applying all the red flags and all these like, oh, he's narcissistic and he's this, without really knowing what these things mean. Everyone is self-serving to some degree. Everyone is self-protective. Period, because that is just who we are as human beings. Everyone, when under threat, will protect themselves in one way or another. So just because you dated someone and they acted in a certain way does not make them a narcissist. Unless you know they have the official diagnosis of that, then you can maybe say that. But just because they acted selfishly, or they acted in a way that didn't consider you, just like so many people on the planet right now, then we're all narcissists, I guess. Like, in if that is the definition. To have narcissistic personality disorder is a really, it's a really serious thing. It's pervasive. It shows up in all different parts of their life, and it is a break in their personality that happens through early childhood trauma. So when we say, well, he was a narcissist, I think there are people, and I know someone who has narcissistic personality disorder, who wants to work on healing that part of himself and has done a lot of work towards healing that self. And when it's thrown around like that, as if it's like a slur, oh, he's such a narcissist, it's really stigmatizing, and it's really hurtful to the people who are, without their choice. They did not have a choice. Now, yes, they do have a responsibility, and they are adults, and they can work on their healing, but that's the point of a personality disorder. They're like the last one to get that memo, because they actually don't have the ability to have, you know, to think that I'm the one that's wrong, that's part of them is compromised. They blame. They don't have the ego strength to take responsibility. So building that ego strength slowly by slowly would be the work of therapy, where they then start to have a little bit of ability to say, oh, I think I did do that wrong. To own something requires ego strength. And that's literally the definition of narcissistic personality. They don't have the ego strength. Now, if someone is hurtful to you, if someone is, you know, you feel used by someone, just don't start throwing these labels around. I do think it's okay that you draw some boundaries, you have healthy communication with those people, especially if they're family members, and you say that, you know, I'm gonna come here and I'm not gonna go there. I think it's okay to say that. But I think just be careful about how superficial things have become, and how quickly it is to label and cancel and switch and, you know, eliminate and delete and block people, and how that is affecting your psyche. Okay, so I wanted to say that about relationships. What I didn't say about purpose, because there was another question asked, which was, how do I find my purpose? Now, I know a lot of people that are sort of feel like they're living out their calling, and they weren't sitting when they found that purpose. Every person I know, whether it's a famous person or a person in my personal life, including myself, who I do feel like I am living out my life's calling, They found it as they were walking on the path of life. One thing that they were was they were really curious, and they entertained that curiosity. They didn't just say, well, I'm going to do this, and this is the only thing I'm going to do, and this is going to be my life purpose. Because who you were at 18 is not who you are at 22, and it's not who you are at 28. Certainly not going to be who you are at 38. You know, like, these things change. So how do you just move with where your life is taking you? Your life force is informing you. And so that's one thing that if you take anybody, you know, whether it's Richard Branson or Steve Jobs or anyone you know that did something that was meaningful and that could look like that is their life's calling or their purpose, they were just curious, and they entertained that curiosity, and they moved, and they moved, and they took risks, and they made mistakes. Oh, that didn't work. Nope, I don't really feel like that. Oh, I don't feel like that either. I don't really like this part of it. And they kept moving. They kept moving, and they kept trying, and they kept going, and then they landed on their purpose. But I think this idea of I have to find my purpose, and then I will go, you know, claim my major at university, I think that's a really big burden to bear at the age of 18. You won't, you can't. You know, I told my daughter, who will soon go to university, that you throw the net wide. Please do not feel you need to know what you're gonna do right now. Do not put this pressure on yourself right now. And just throw the net wide. You want to take a political science class. You want to take a, you know, physical education class. You want to take a philosophy class. You want to take an English class. You want to take applied mathematics class. Whatever. Just throw the net. Because this is your journey. And learn everything there is to learn. But pay attention to where you lose yourself in something. That is going to guide you towards your calling. That's not the calling necessarily, but that will guide you to where you will be at some point in your life. I did my undergraduate degree in cultural anthropology and communications, and mostly journalism. I didn't like psychology in undergrad. It was super focused on pathology, and I just wasn't into that right at that point. And I just was interested in people and stories and cultures, and it fascinated me. And my dad didn't even know what anthropology was, but he knew that there was, like, once I make up my mind that I'm just gonna go with it. And so cultural anthropology is the study of human cultures and, you know, and societies. And I just went with it. I had no idea what I was going to do with it, but I was like, it'll come. I'll find a way. Maybe I'll go into international business, or I'll do something that requires me to know many cultures. And I went with it. And thank you, Dad, for paying for that, or helping me pay for that, because that, and now it is informing my practice. Is making me aware of the different cultures and subcultures that show up in the room. It never ever, learning never ever goes to waste. So follow that bliss, as Joseph Campbell would say, and move in that direction. And just know that you're not landing anywhere until you get somewhere, and then you will know when you get there. And even then, be open that it might be something that you do for a decade and a half, and now you can change again, and you can go back to school, and you can keep learning. So I think take the pressure off of yourself is the answer, the short answer, and follow your bliss in whichever way you can. So for the person who is making a living because they want to take care of their family, this person was like, I have to take care of my kids and my elderly parents. Do the honorable thing and keep doing that, and know that you are rare. This, you know, this duty, this obligation that we have to each other, to our families, I wish more people acted from that place of duty and obligation and not what brings me joy only. I think it's really important that we serve and sacrifice parts of ourselves for, in service of another. I believe that to be a value that is rare, rarely exercised. And then find something that gives you bliss, whatever that might be. And I know many people that are doing that. So that's what I would say to the purpose and calling question. The next question was about anger and feelings, and how do you sit with feelings, and like, what does that mean? I think I might have answered that question in my previous Instagram live, but I'll answer it in a different way here. And the first thing that I would say when it comes to anger, I think anger has got a bad rap. And I think anger is one of the most important signals, the most important messengers that we have from our psyche, our spirit, our nervous system. Something is not right. That is what anger says. Some line has been crossed, some boundary has been compromised. Something that I believe in is not happening here. Anger is mobilizing. When we are in that fight or flight, we are mobilized to do something. And usually the signal that makes us in that fight or flight is that I'm under threat. Okay, so something in me is being threatened. So anger is very protective. And so when I ask people, is anger good or bad? They will most likely say it's bad. It's not bad. No feeling / emotion is bad. It's when we get locked into anger and stuck in that space of anger rather than letting it inform us, that's when we feel bad. That's when we know we lost ourselves. That's when we feel guilty. That's when we feel ashamed that we lost ourselves. And so anger, if you are working on self-regulation, if you are working on emotional regulation, if you are soothing yourself and then paying attention to, okay, well, what's going on here? Wow, it is so informative. So the first thing that I want to talk about when it comes to anger is that it is not good or bad. It just is information, okay? The second thing I would say, that you cannot hear the message until you have come down to a state of sort of equilibrium within yourself. So soothe before you sit with it. Soothe before you solve. Soothe before you, you know, redirect. I think Dan Siegel talks about connect and then redirect, something to that effect. So first we've got to soothe the system, because it's feeling under threat. And I've done two of these Instagram lives on window of tolerance and our nervous system, and how do you create safety within that nervous system. So let's just say anger shows up. If I were to go inside and there was like a control center inside of you, like in the movie Inside Out, it would be blaring red. You are under threat. You are under threat. That's what it would be saying. So what do I need to do at first when I'm feeling anger? I would first say, take down the threat. So if the environment feels threatening, so maybe you're sitting in a meeting or someone is yelling at you, or you just had a car accident, or God protect you, but let's just say something like that happens, you first have to bring yourself down into a state of safety and bring safety into the body. And that might mean doing just what I'm doing right now, where you're pressing down in the heart center. It might mean that you are bringing coolness to the back of the neck, the ears. You can find a way to soothe yourself. Rubbing your arms is a way to soothe yourself. Saying mantras like "I am safe," shaking, all of these things are going to be okay. I am safe. Now, when I am really under threat, I don't shake. I shake after, just because I'm like, at that point I'm like frozen, or I'm in attack. Like, I don't want to shake at that point. But you need to figure out what works for you. So you have your own little medicine bag of things that work. And your system is different from my system, which is different from her system and his system. So you need to figure out what works for your system and do that. And so for my system, I just need to like be loved in that moment and just say, you're safe. Everything is okay. You're safe. It's just a feeling. You're good. Or it's just a fall. Or it's just an accident. It's okay. You're okay. Everything's gonna be okay. So holding myself like this and talking to myself like that is very important to me. The back of the neck is also a very sensitive area for me. And then I also find myself at, you know, rubbing the top of my thighs. That also can activate your safety systems within your body. Your belly, your chest, your back of your neck, your head, you know, just this, like these, this kind of self-touch alongside with saying these kinds of safe words will bring the threat down within your control center inside of you. Then I will go inside to the control center when I am calm and my breathing has regulated. Oh, I forgot to mention breath. So when you are in that fight, anger, state, what you want to do is you want to double down on your exhale. So most people are like, take deep breaths, but they're, no, don't do that. The breath can just be this, don't stiffen up. We want to keep the body relaxed and just breathe in. And then you want to do twice as long of a out breath as you do an in breath. Okay? So that's what I would do is while I'm holding one hand on my belly, one hand on my chest, I would take a in breath for 4 and an out breath for 8. That's all you have to remember at that point. Once I'm feeling a bit calm, then I would, if I have space, because maybe you're just in the middle of a meeting and you don't have space at that point, I will say to myself, or I'll write a note to myself, revisit this experience, or something happened, talk to my therapist, or talk to a safe person, talk to my person. I gotta, like, this happened, he said this, or she said this, and then I felt completely triggered. So I might just jot down some of that stuff, write it down on the piece of paper in front of me, or on my phone, and then I would come to it later. So you don't have to sit with it in that moment. All you have to do is you just have to tell yourself you're safe and you're gonna get to it. And that's what you have to do in that time. One of the things that's really going to help you sit with it is building that muscle of mindfulness, that awareness. Mindfulness is just being with whatever is, with a kindness and a curiosity, and also this. So Tara Brach talks about, and also this, and also this, and also this, and also this. So you are expanding yourself rather than shrinking yourself to that one feeling. Because anger doesn't show up alone, ever. I've never had anger show up alone. That was like the loudest feeling, but underneath, there were many, 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 many feelings. Disappointment, betrayal, grief, fear, shame. All of these will show up when I'm angry. So at that point, I'm gonna come to all of that, but let's just bring us down to homeostasis first. And so that's what we will do. And then you will come and you will sit with it. And you will ask, okay, what happened? And you literally will need to be this kind of wise adult to that inner part of you that felt very threatened in that moment, that felt very scared, and that was very protective in that moment. What were you protecting? What did you feel afraid about? What were you feeling ashamed about? What were you feeling sad about? Is there something else that was going on? So you literally are going to deconstruct that anger and get to it. If you don't know how to do that on your own, you would get to do that work with a therapist. You could do that work with a coach who is informed. I think a lot of coaches are now becoming trauma-informed also. So I think knowing a little bit about the nervous system is an important thing, because sometimes we can just get lost, stuck in our thoughts, but we're really not paying attention to what signals our body is giving us. And don't think that you're gonna solve it all at once. So, oh, I sat with it for an hour, I'm done. Mm-mm. You know, yesterday I was sitting with students, and one student, and I was just talking about a career in psychology, and one student asked me, which some question that no one really has asked me before, like, do you regret anything that you did in the way you started the Lighthouse or in the way you started your career? And I told her, I'm like, I have sat every year, every month of every year with this, well, I don't know this feeling of regret. And I've done a lot of things that could be regretted for the outside world, but I don't regret them because I really did them with the best of my intentions. I might have been unskilled in the way I sort of bulldozed over certain things, but I learned from that, and now I don't bulldoze over those things. So I cannot regret something that taught me. And I am better because of that. And I've done a lot of things where I've made many, 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 many mistakes in my life, many, personal and professional. But I don't regret them. I'm sad, I hurt people, but I learned to be better. I apologized always, I reconnected always, I owned always, I took responsibility always. So I can't regret. I don't know how. Until this summer, I learned the feeling of regret. And I have never felt that feeling before in my life. And that feeling was when I dropped my son off at boarding school. And I was driving away and he was there and I was here. And it was a very sudden decision for our family, for him to go to boarding school. He wanted it. It was like his life's dream to go to this, you know, institution that, you know. And so we said, okay, let's do it. But I thought I had four more years with him. I had, you know, and as I drove away, and it's gonna make me even emotional now, that what is that feeling? And it was a gripping feeling. And it is a feeling that is so big that I actually have not metabolized it. And that happened in August. That, you know, regret for those who feel it, for those who, you know, regret for a time gone, regret for all the ways that I could have been a better mother. Regret is much bigger than guilt. It's much bigger than shame. Regret there's a feeling of powerlessness that I feel. With guilt, I don't feel powerless. Guilt is informing me that I did something wrong, now go fix it. Shame is saying you are wrong. And we have felt that. It feels different. Regret, there's a panic in it. There's an anxiety in it. There's a fear in it. There's a shame in it. There's a guilt in it. There's a it's like all systems are go at that point. Fight, flight, freeze, fawn, everything is moving at the same time. And that's why I said it's stunning. I was stunned by this feeling, like a stun gun. I was like, what is that? And so in my mid-40s, I feel a feeling for the first time. And the reason why I'm sharing this with you is that this is how I process feelings. That happened to me in August. And I'm sitting with it. And I go to it, and then I step away from it, and then it becomes too big for me, and then I put my toe in it again, and then I go into it again. But there is something I have to learn here about regret and how to do life differently. And there is a lesson here for me. But right now, I'm just working on sitting with that feeling and breathing through it and allowing it to exist in me and not just come and, like, you know, flood me. And because that's what it is. It's flooding. It's stunning. It's overwhelming. And it's really a scary feeling, regret. Regret is a very scary feeling because you can't bring back that time. That's what regret is about. It's the powerlessness of it for me that is the scariest thing. That with all the other feelings, I'm mobilized to do something different and it will inform me and I'll be better. But yeah, fine, I'll be better and I'll be more attentive to my children and I will be, you know, I'll take more time and I'll do all of that, which is what regret sort of comes with, and I'll learn the lessons. That's the easy part for me. But there's time gone and I'm never going to get it back and they're never going to be little again. And did I miss that? Could I have done better? Could I have been better? Could I have remembered more? Could I have paid more attention? That's what regret is. And I think that's just a feeling that I think you just have to live with. You can't resolve that one. I think for people who've lost someone to death or parents who have had children go away to college or women that are premenopause, menopause, you know, these types of feelings that time is gone and I am now not there anymore. It's like an existential experience, regret, and you just have to live with it. You can't make that one go away. You can't heal that one. Not that I know of right now. Stay tuned. I might figure out a way. But I think it's really powerful. And so as I talk about feeling feelings and being with feelings and sitting with feelings and letting feelings come and go, and, you know, if it's too big of a feeling, don't just go and sit with it. You might have to just put your finger in it and then put your other finger in it and come back and sit with a co-regulator who will regulate you while you go, you know, sort of swimming in that feeling. So there's many, many things that I'm now for the first time experiencing this big feeling, and I'm not aware of this feeling, so I'm doing for myself. So that's how you want to take on feelings. Don't just try to get rid of them. Like, that would be really like a shame. I'm not going to try to get rid of regret. I don't want to know if it's going to be okay. I don't want to know. That's not the point of this feeling, to make myself feel better. I already have that part of myself really, really developed. That compassionate part is really developed. Now I want to go into the darkness of this feeling and say, what else do you have for me? Without making us, oh no, it's okay, but you know, he's in a better place, and look at, it was his dream, and oh look at, I'm missing the plot here. The plot is, my psyche gave me, in my mid-40s, the feeling of regret. And it is a gift from my psyche, because it is teaching me about something that I have to learn. And I'm gonna go into the shadow of regret, into the darkness of regret, into the heat of regret, into the fires of regret. And I wanna know everything there is to know about it. And so maybe next October, I'll tell you what I learned. But I'm not just going to be dismissive about it. There is so much there for me, and I know it. So that's what I would say about feelings, that it would be such a shame if you didn't let them inform you, if you didn't let them guide you, if you didn't let them teach you. These are like signals from our psyche. You know, in the movie Inception? No, it's not Inception. Interstellar, where the father, what's his name? Interstellar, anyways, the father, McConaughey, or yeah. Well, he's in the bookshelf and he's in another dimension. And he's trying to get his daughter's attention. And he is kicking the book and kicking the book, but he's just in a parallel dimension. And then he kicks the book and it throws the watch down and time sort of stands. And then she feels that there's something there. And she's like, "But what's, like, something was here." That's what your psyche is doing with the feelings. It's like getting your attention. This matters to you. This is how you can, you know, evolve. This is how you can grow. This is how you can work towards more wholesome emotions. This is how your ego gets triggered. This is where the wound is. Oh my God, there's so much that the ego is, or the soul, the psyche is pointing towards. At that point, the spirit is pointing towards. So do not dishonor this experience by just giving these like false accolades or superficial, like, oh no, but never mind, and it's okay, like, you'll feel better soon. No, it gave you a message. This is really important. This is what your psyche is saying. This is really important. One other thing that I want to say about anger is also that while you are sitting with all of these dark and difficult emotions, wise emotions, it's super important that you are cultivating the more wholesome emotions, or I'm not using the word good or bad, as you can tell. This is more about creating emotions that are wholesome. I'm just gonna call it wholesome, and feeding those as well, like the story of the two wolves, where the son goes to the grandfather and he's, and the grandfather says, inside of all of us, there are two wolves. One that is angry and greedy and, you know, protective and mean and attacking and, you know, lying. That's one wolf. And then another wolf is generous and kind and connected to humanity and, you know, all the good things that, you know, all of the high values that we have is the other wolf, and they're always fighting with each other, said the grandfather to the son. And the son said, well, which one wins? And the grandfather said, it's the one you feed. And so we all have them, and we all have to listen to all of them, But you also have to grow the other parts of you. You have to practice generosity. You have to practice compassion. You have to practice gratitude. You have to practice kindness. Not just be like, oh, I am kind. What are the kind things you did last week? What are the generous things you did last week? What are the grateful moments that you had last week? You are what you do. Not what you think or what you say or what you believe. You are what you do. So where are you doing some of these high values that you say you live by? And how did you do that? Right? So this one, so we need, as we are working on sitting with some of this stuff that is gripping the other wolf and listening to him or her, we need to be doing the other stuff too. Because this is the stuff that grounds us. This is the stuff that keeps us connected so we don't lose ourselves in our darkness. Because we can. That's why there's an ego. One is the ego, one is the soul. And we need to do soulful things. And that's where you will keep grounded in your wise, wholesome, connected, human, kind, open-hearted self. And then you do this too. So you have to do both. So that's what I would say about feelings and anger. Soothe before you sit. Understand, make space for. Don't think that you can just get to the answer right away. This is an ongoing journey. Your psyche will give you more and more the safer it feels. You can create safety in the body by doing all the things I said. You can create safety in your environment for this psyche. And you can create safety by being with safe people in your life. It is really important. Okay? So now I'm going to take some questions. So I think I did that one. Someone said, how do you manage anger in children? You know, I did a talk recently for being trauma-informed in schools for teachers. Just being trauma-informed. And one of the things I learned as I was researching being trauma-informed, and I sort of got into it through the polyvagal system and window of tolerance, and what is traumatic for me is not what is traumatic for you. Trauma is what happens to our nervous system. So what is overwhelming and something I cannot process, that is what is experienced as trauma for that individual. And that could be anything for anyone. And so for children who are acting angry, and we know that anger means that they feel threatened or they feel protective of something, my question would be, what happened? What happened to you? Rather than, what are you doing? Because we really move to stop doing that. What are you doing? Stop being angry. Rather than like, wait a minute, what's going on? Why are you being like this? Like, what happened to you? And that's what I would say to yourself also. When you start getting angry and agitated, and I would say, what happened? Oh, you know, I didn't sleep well and probably shouldn't have had some food in the middle of my day. But when I get angry and agitated, I'm not judging. I'm saying, what's going on? Because I know I'm not an angry person. And human beings are not angry. We actually are wired for social connection. We are wired to be with each other. We are wired for joy. We are empathy. And so if someone is not acting like that, and I did this with my kids all the time, and that's why I hardly used any punishment with my children, in my parenting, because I was always like, what happened? Like, what's going on? Because it's just not their natural state. If they're joy and they're happy and they're giggling and they're cuddly, and then they start yelling and screaming, and I'm like, what just happened? Something happened to him. What is he worried about? What is he? So I get really curious. And that's what I would say, that their anger is communicating some threat that they might be under. And threat to a system can be really anything. It can be overstimulation. Maybe, you know, they went to a mall and then they went to a park and then they went, and their system just becomes really, really overstimulated. And that, for the neuroception of that nervous system, is threatening. Overstimulation is threatening. Maybe they're not getting their 9 to 12 hours of sleep that they need to be getting, you know, in that age range. They really need to be sleeping a lot. Maybe they're looking at too much technology. Maybe they saw something on TV that really disturbed them and they didn't know how to process that. That's happening a lot. They have access to everything, and YouTube and Netflix, like, these things don't have ratings necessarily, that, you know, it's not like it's blocked, is what I'm saying. They can all watch anything at any point. And so they're viewing things that are disturbing to their cognitive abilities. They can't process it. They don't know what to do with that information, and that feels like a traumatic experience for them. And when I'm saying traumatic experience, I'm talking about little t rather than big T. So an acute trauma is different from different types of trauma. Maybe I'll do a trauma talk next time. That sounds like a good topic. And so that's what I would ask, is what happened? And I would ask yourself the same question when you start to feel agitated. Let's see. Question. One more question. So someone said, I can't get out of my comfort zone. How do I get out of my comfort zone? So comfort zone is literally the window of tolerance. So I did an Instagram live on the window of tolerance. And the window of tolerance, if you just like to stay in your comfort zone, is this big. And then you create safety, and you build coping skills, and you create safety, and you build coping skills, and you create safety, and you build coping skills, and you grow that window of tolerance. And then, you know, you're building literally inner resources to take on the challenges of life. So that's what you're gonna have to do to nudge yourself out. And then you don't jump out of the comfort zone. You kind of nudge yourself out of the comfort zone, because you don't want to move into the terror zone. Because over there is the terror zone. Here is the growth zone. Here is the comfort zone. Here is the terror zone. We want to be somewhere here. And you just have to work towards nudging yourself, slowly desensitizing yourself, growing your ability to tolerate difficult feelings like anxiety, and then you breathe through it and you create safety, and then you nudge yourself through it. So it's systematically taking risks while managing your anxiety and your nervous system. And then you're like, okay, well, I did that. Now I'm going to take a little bit of a different risk or a bigger risk. And so you nudge yourself out of that comfort zone. So you want to make sure that when you do set those goals, that they are challenging and reachable. You don't want to jump into the deep end, because that's going to be too much of a fearful or anxiety provoking type of experience, and you haven't yet built the muscles. Like going to the gym, you're not benching 100 at first go. Maybe you have to start with 15, but you don't want to just stay with 2. Right? If you're just lifting 2 or 20, and that's all you are doing, and then you just stay there, you don't build any muscle. But then you go to 22 and 25 and 29 and 34, and then you keep pushing, and eventually you build 100. So that's kind of how you want to think about taking risks in your life too. And you might need some support. So for example, with my kids, I'll say, I'll go with you. I'll be there. I'll be sitting over here, you go do that. So I'm now providing scaffolding for that person, and I'm regulating her as she goes and does something that is scary for her. And then you take on that challenge. Now, make sure you also are practicing and you're building the skills. So for example, public speaking, you don't want to just get up there and start public speaking. Like, don't do that. You have to practice. You have to do it in front of the camera, then do it in front of another person. Like, you slowly have to build up to that. But it is a skill. And so if there is a skill involved, you want to learn the skill as you nudge yourself out. So that's what I would say to that. All right, thank you guys for being with me, and keep sending me your questions. They really kind of inform me on what I'm going to talk about. I think the next session is going to be about trauma. I feel excited about that topic. And I really would encourage you guys to watch the lives that I've shared, because everything is sort of building upon each other since I came back from the summer. And it all sort of is saying, you know, it's like a book, basically, and you kind of have to read the chapters. You can skip the chapter, it's okay, because I'll probably end up repeating some of it, but to really understand what I'm talking about, it does build upon each other. So keep sending me your questions, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Bye, guys. Okay.